T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I'm not too concerned with, as far as my own personal concerns, with COVID kind of back on the rise, it seems, in a lot of states. It's going to be imperative that us as players do everything we can away from the field to, practice social distancing, stay safe. Not expose ourselves to any risk at all, in the sense of like going out somewhere or being around a lot of people. I just think that we're all going to have to come together and maybe even have a conversation about it and be like, hey, if we want to get through this whole season, not have to worry about this as a team, then we're really going to have to hunker down when it comes to away from the field stuff.
Somebody said it, no less than White Sox ace Lucas Giolito, talking about the individual professional responsibility these guys have, not just to themselves and not just to their teammates, but to everybody when we talk about public health responsibilities. Interesting times for baseball right now, and here to talk about that is Cody Decker. He's on Twitter at Decker6. He is a Radio.com MLB insider and the co-host of the Swings and Misses podcast as well. He's on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. How you been, Cody?
Oh, Dan, I'm just living this wonderful Twilight Zone version of the dream, baby.
It is a dream. I don't know if it's the dream. I don't know if it's the one you want. It's the one you wake up from and you think, what the hell was that? And unfortunately, it continues to be all too real.
Every day, I think I've traveled into a parallel dimension.
So when you hear Lucas Giolito say that, and you think about players actually talking to each other, and when you are in the same room or yelling from across your social distance field, I would love to know, is that really possible? Do you think that players can understand, look, it's with all these protocols in place and everything that the game is trying to do, we have a responsibility as well to not be idiots about this?
Is it possible? Yes. Do I find it to be likely? No. I played for 11 years, and I love baseball. I love baseball players more than just about anything, but I cannot sit here and pretend that baseball players are the smartest bunch when it comes to anything. Lucas is an incredible rare example of the opposite. I've known him since he was like 12 years old. Lucas is one of the brightest, smartest, most kind and generous people you could ever meet in your life. I don't like the idea that we're putting this on the players to police themselves. I quite frankly think that the players' union needs to step in and work with Major League Baseball and the teams in general to honestly put together protocols. Specific protocols of punishments for players that break certain quarantines. I think the only way this works is if everyone just stays in. All it takes is one player to infect the entire league. And, you're seeing players drop out right now. Ian Desmond wrote a very long and poignant post on why he's not playing this season. It's understandable. It's commendable. But, it's scary because the KBO has a rule in place right now. If one player gets COVID, the whole league gets shut down. And I don't think Major League Baseball is going to do that. I think once game one starts, they're pushing through. And I think it's what's in the best interest of the players. And honestly, staffs and coaching staffs, there are managers in baseball who are immunocompromised, one of which being Chicago White Sox manager Ricky Renteria, not to mention Dave Roberts. He survived cancer a few years ago out of Los Angeles. There are serious consequences to this, and I think something needs to be put in place.
I just don't know how they enforce some of the little things around the edges. If they say, you know, the first baseman holding on a runner and sweeping the tag down, you don't want to get too close or hold the tag on too long. The idea that baseball players aren't going to spit? I mean, you can't throw a flag every time a Major League Baseball player spits on the ground. Some of this to me is still wishful thinking, even in the protocols themselves.
It's definitely wishful thinking. I mean, I can just imagine myself playing into the game right now. I wouldn't be spitting to be defiant. I would do it just out of pure habit. It's a very odd time. I think this is possible. Yes, I think they can get through this. But to sit here and be happy and excited about them getting through it unscathed is a completely different conversation. I don't know how they're going to enforce any of these things. I don't know if what kind of punishments are involved if these rules are violated. They haven't really announced them. This was kind of a big problem for me when we were sitting around haggling over a financial agreement that was already signed in March, and we spent 3 days on safety.
I've been walking through this scenario, and I'm trying to figure out what the ramifications are. In a given baseball game, these are competitors. These are guys who play a game who there are certain moments of machismo that flare up, and we know exactly what they are. Whether it's a hard slide on the bases or whether it's somebody who's throwing inside at 100 miles an hour, tempers flare. We've seen it. With whether it's Amir Garrett or anybody else. And we know what the presumption is. The presumption is I'm gonna go visit that mound and you and I are gonna have at it. Or the bullpen's gonna empty and the dugouts are gonna empty. That's not happening. And we know it's not happening. That there's no way, even with all of these assumptions and all of our usual chain of baseball escalation of macho stupidity, it can't do that for a couple reasons. First of all, nobody wants to be rubbing all over each other in one of these baseball slap fights. And secondly, it's a 60-game season in which when all those suspensions come down, your team's entire chance could be shot by multiple suspensions. So where does that go? How do we sublimate the tension when inevitably we've got a pitcher throwing inside or hitting a bunch of guys? Or I'm going to hit your guy. You're going to hit this guy. It can't go anywhere now.
It's actually what I was talking – I was talking about this last week when it comes to the Houston Astros, because Kenley Jansen, closer for the Dodgers, came out saying, well, I'm not going to throw it at any of the Astros. Yeah, of course you're not, because if you lose a game this season, it really, really matters, and you can't put Astros on base. It's going to be interesting. So any macho machismo nonsense that we've come to know and be part of the game, it's going to have to be put on hold till next spring training.
And I do think that there's always been a professional courtesy there. And as much as the competition is big and real and intense, do you think not just going through the labor negotiation when the players were tighter than ever and held their ground and got their prorated pay, that the owners failed to fracture the union? They failed in using all of their media mouthpieces to try to turn the conversation against them. People are fans are behind the players more than ever in any anecdotal Twitter poll that you see. Plus, there's the collective bargaining that's going to occur after this season. Do you think that the fraternity, the player brotherhood in some ways in that regard is stronger than it's ever been?
These last 2 months have shown me that the players union is actually the strongest it's been since I started playing professional baseball. After watching Tony Clark get absolutely decimated in the last CBA, the players were furious, but after this whole Astros scandal, you saw all spring training, players were eating each other alive during spring training. It was ugly to the point where the owners clearly smelled blood in the water. They tried their very best to break the union even more, and it backfired. Now I think we're in for one hell of a dogfight this upcoming CBA. And I think if these last 2 months were any indication of what it's going to be, this is going to get ugly because – this got ugly just now, and it was about an agreement that was already made in March. It was about an already made agreement. That's what's so mind-boggling to me about it. So if that's what we were doing about something that we already agreed to, what are the disagreements going to be?
We're talking with Cody Decker on Sports Radio 670 WSCR, The Score. And we've no idea what the baseball is going to look like or when it's going to look normal. When you would go through spring training, let alone a second spring training, what for you was the last thing to come back, the last thing to get to 100% readiness?
Timing, looking at off-speed pitches. You know, the first few weeks of spring training, especially in games, the pitchers are, for the most part, just throwing fastballs and changeups. You might see a slider here and there, but for the most part, early spring training is the easiest time to hit, even though your timing's off. It's once you get to towards the end, all of a sudden they're feeding in breaking balls, hard breaking balls, sliders at 91 miles per hour, low and away. You know, that week is usually a lull for just about everybody, but that's just about it. It's just getting in the repetitive nature of playing every day. I honestly think spring training is about a week or two too long. It becomes one hell of a grind when you get towards the very end. But it's just getting the at-bats and repetitiveness. And once you get out into the season, it's almost like the first couple of weeks of season is usually a couple of weeks out the gate is a little slow until you start getting the rhythm of what the actual baseball season is. It's a different time period than it is in spring training because you're playing during the day in spring training after a full morning of workouts. And during the season, everything's at night. So it's almost like getting jet lagged for the first week.
Baseball teams, more than teams in other sports, live together. They spend a lot of time in that clubhouse. So you hear Joe Maddon talk about it, and he thinks it's too much. He said, I don't want guys in here 5 hours before the game sipping coffee out of a styrofoam cup and watching video the whole time. That's why he's held his American Legion week. He said, show up and play. You want to show you ride your bike over in your uniform and show up and play. It's all going to be different in these clubhouses now where you're not going to have the connective clubhouse life. They don't want you there. They want you in and around the dugout and then even socially distanced. I've never been a real baseball romantic as far as clubhouse chemistry and some of that stuff. But I think we're going to get some kind of objective test of how things are different with teams, relationships and veteran leadership and all that. How does a team handle the fact that you're not going to be like a baseball team, that you're not going to be in and around, which is what so many people love about the sport?
I mean, I'm going to tell you, I understand why you wouldn't be romantic about it, but I got to tell you, the best teams I ever played on hung out in the clubhouse for hours before the game. I would get to the field every day at noon so I can get my own personal work in. And then, just like Joe Maddon would say, I would sip a lot of coffee out of the styrofoam cup. But how is it going to look? I don't know. I don't know what this is going to do to dynamics of certain teams. I think it could hurt a team like the Chicago White Sox, who are young and impressionable but super talented. I look at who the veteran leadership on that team is right now. You have Dallas Keuchel, but he's new to the team. And I can tell you right now, Yasmani Grandal is not going to be the leader of anything ever. It's going to be interesting to see. You got some incredible young guys like Moncada. Lucas Giolito is young, but you want a guy who's a leader? Lucas Giolito. We'll see what this does to dichotomy of certain teams, but I think older veteran teams are going to still, probably dominate their divisions. I mean, I'm expecting a lot out of the Dodgers. The Minnesota Twins are another team I'm expecting a ton out of. I think the Rays are going to do a lot of damage. I think they have a good shot of even beating the Yankees in their division, provided the Yankees don't come back completely healthy. I think this is going to be the most unique season ever, but the 60-game portion is what's going to be super interesting about it because everybody's on a dead sprint. A 10-game winning streak is the equivalent of a 25-game winning streak. This is going to be madness. I mean, I talked about teams that, are completely out of it just out of the gate, and that's Detroit and Baltimore and the Pirates. But if the Pirates go on a 9-game winning streak, they have a chance to sneak into the playoffs. This is going to be insane, and I honestly can't wait to see it.
Why did you say what you just said about Grandal?
Oh, I played with him, and he did steroids in the dugout and the clubhouse in front of us. I couldn't stand him.
Is that the reason why you couldn't stand him, or are there other reasons?
I just didn't really care for him. I just chalk it up that he was young, and, he's probably grown up quite a bit since then. He's been through quite a lot since then. He's played for multiple organizations now, and he's had a lot of success. The version of Grandal I played with was a lot younger and a lot different.
Wow. I mean, because that's – did anybody say anything to him if, as you say, he was doing steroids right there in front of everybody?
No, we didn't know. He was using those suckers. He was part of the Biogenesis scandal. He was, like, eating gummies that were laced with HGH. And he got caught. He got caught, and he got suspended. But immediately after suspension, he just, you know, went right to the big leagues like nothing ever happened. So is there a little bit of bitterness from a lot of us on that one? Yeah. But, you know, he has proved to be a very solid baseball player. He's an all-star, and he can help that team win.
One thing you talk about, and you see leadership on the White Sox maybe not having the same effect. That was, you know, really Jose Abreu and having the young Cuban players, and, you know, having Luis Robert and having Eloy Jimenez. Maybe that lessens the effect of the mentorship, the whatever they thought they were getting from Abreu.
Maybe. Yeah, there's a possibility. I think the White Sox are about a year away and 1 year away from legitimately competing. But based on this expanded playoffs, there's no reason that maybe they can really get in there this year. They're young, they're talented, and they're going to be together for a while. That's a pretty good core group of players. I think I think the Twins right now are the best team in that division. I think the Twins. I picked them to go to the World Series, you know, before COVID even hit. But I think the White Sox have a real shot at trying to battle for one of those wild card spots. You know, Lucas Giolito, what he did last year as a starter was incredible. And I think he's only going to get better because he's just got that mentality to him. Anderson, I think, is one of the most dynamic young players in baseball, and I can't wait to see what he does next. I think this is going to be a fun team to watch going forward. I really do.
Before we let you go, Cody, I started the show by pointing out how extraordinary it is that we have baseball players and NBA players, and I'm sure we will have hockey players and football players opting out for whatever reason. And it's for primarily health reasons, but we heard Fred VanVleet of the Toronto Raptors say that we in the NBA, as young black men deciding to come back as a group and entertain and distract, said we probably shouldn't be playing right now. We should be dedicating ourselves to a much more important movement. This is just, it's such a remarkable time. And I'm old enough to remember on this radio station going back decades when a player would take a day because his wife was going into labor and he wanted to be there at the birth of his child. And these phone lines would light up. And who does this guy think he is? I pay his salary. I'm a season ticket holder, and he's got to come play the game, or not, he might lose. And now, fans, the average fan, has evolved to a point where it's completely understood that a player is a fully fledged human being who is free to make some of these decisions on his own. It really, it's amazing to me that there hasn't been outcry, there hasn't been outrage, there hasn't been, come on, you got to entertain me, you got to earn your millions. That I think the average fan of pro sports has come a long way in understanding the athlete as person.
I think you're right. I think a lot of the average fans have grown a little bit to see what this actually takes and what there is. Not to say that there isn't plenty of the I would play for free crowd, but the average fan really has grown. But to the flip side of Van Vleet's comment is, yes, I think everyone should do their part absolutely for these extraordinary causes. That being said, I think sports lends themselves to the grandest stage of all to fight for those causes. And where we are right now as a country with these causes, I think we'll get a lot of people talking. How much did we talk about what Kaepernick did a few years ago at the time and watch the narrative get absolutely stolen and changed up to what it actually was about? I don't think that happens right now. And I think sports gives you the stage to express your opinion and express your feelings towards this.
I think we're in a different place. I went so far earlier as to say that sports is different forever now. I don't think that this is a bell that can be unrung, and I think it's a good thing.
I hope we are different and better forever now. I really do. There are some things every day that make me lose a little bit of hope. Just get on my Twitter timeline and you'll see. But
I do.
But it's just, you know, that it seems like we are going, we are slowly and kicking and screaming getting into a better place. And that's, you know, they always say things always have to get worse before they get better. And can you say that anything's ever been worse than the last couple of months? But I think we're getting better. And I think sports is better off because of it. And I hope we as fans will continue to be better off because of it as well.
Let's end on that positive note. Cody Decker, thank you, man.
No, thank you.
That is Cody Decker. Follow him on Twitter. He's a good follow, at Decker, the numeral 6. Coming up, we have to deal with, I want to make sure I heard what I thought I heard from Boomer Esiason on the Boomer and Geo show on our sister station, WFAN. And it has to do with what's going on in big-time college football right now. And we got to get to the bottom of something here, because it's kind of wild. It gets back to something Mike Florio talked about, and I just want to make sure I heard what I thought I heard, and we've got to figure out the validity of this. So we'll listen to it together, and then we'll discuss. That's coming up next. I'm Dan Bernstein. You have the score.
Dan McNeil here from the Mac and Parkin Show. Afternoons 2 to 6 on the score. Cubs and White Sox fans, baseball is back in Chicago, so keep it here on the score. We will be discussing this shortened season, plus all the new rules, changes, and more on the Mac and Parkin Show. It's afternoons 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
This is Damon Amendolara with your Radio.com Sports Minute. Bravo to the Atlanta Hawks. They've actually done something more than a press release or a social media post. They've used their resources to help their community. In the primary runoff next month and for the general election in November, their State Farm Arena in downtown Atlanta will be a massive polling location. If we all agree that the core of democracy is everyone's voice being heard, then what the Hawks are doing is the most patriotic of causes. These arenas, ballparks, and stadiums are so often funded by us, the taxpayers. So let's hope this is real change, where publicly funded sports facilities become places for the public, for voting. Well done to the Hawks. This is Damon Amendolara.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
There are so many different ways that this can go. There are so many different permutations and ideas and possibilities. You know, if I owned a team, or if I was a coach or a GM, I'd be thinking about splitting my team up, having one group do training camp at the facility, the other group do it at the stadium, because if there's going to be an outbreak, the best way to minimize it is have half the team in one place, half the team in the other. Quarantining specific positional players like quarterbacks, so you have a guy ready in the event the quarterback room ends up becoming infected. And you know what? If I'm an individual player, and I don't condone this, and I think it's reckless, I think it's stupid, I think it's dumb, but if you're a fringe guy, and you know that a positive test in training camp isn't just going to get you shut down for 3 weeks, it's going to get you cut, I can't help but wonder whether some of these guys are thinking about deliberately exposing themselves now so they can get the antibodies, because people think if you have the antibodies, you're good to go. I mean, how ridiculous is that? If people are going to take PEDs to enhance their ability to play week in and week out, and there's this virus that if you catch it at the wrong time, you're done, your career's over, you're out, you don't get your chance to prove yourself. I think that that's a very real dynamic in all of this, and I don't think that we know yet that being positive for the antibodies gives you that free pass that you're not going to get it at some point during the season.
That was Mike Florio a while back talking about people trying to expose themselves or actually acquire the virus on purpose to get the antibodies because it would be better for their professional prospects. And it, just getting one's head around the idea of that is nearly impossible. And that's talking about pros. So even if we're going to kind of take a step down the road of that being possible, which I'm loath to do, but you could consider, all right, these are guys desperate for a job or to feed their families, however you want to put it. But then there was this. On our sister station in New York, WFAN, Boomer and Geo, Boomer Esiason, he floated an idea about what he thinks might be going on in college football. So listen to how he says this as we try to determine what's real in here.
I got to be really careful here, because I don't want to say that this is an accusation. I don't want to. I just was thinking the other day about what is going on with the SEC teams down south, and Clemson included, who's obviously an ACC team. A lot of their players are coming down with COVID-19, oddly enough. So are they trying to herd immunity their teams so these guys can get sick now as opposed to getting sick during the college football season, if in fact there is one? And I'm telling you right now, I wouldn't put it past any of those guys down there.
Sure. I mean, that's one of the first things I said about Belichick. I said, I watched Belichick get his whole team sick, so when the season rolls around, everybody's been through it already. Like, he would be the guy that would do that. So, and I was saying that facetiously, but, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility.
I think it's going on. I honestly, the numbers coming out of, like, you know, Alabama, LSU, and Clemson, all these teams,
yeah,
it's too much of a coincidence.
Hey, Marcus, go cough on this guy. And then you cough on him, and then you cough on the whole secondary.
I mean,
y'all be fine in 3 weeks. Just shut up, take your temperature, go to your doctor. Y'all young, you'll be fine.
I mean, Ed Orgeron directing people to get sick is something that I don't think is that crazy.
Right. I don't think it's that crazy either. I mean, that's, you know, now you have 16 NBA players that have tested positive, and all these guys are most like, you know, they're all going to get through it. They're all going to come through it fine.
What? What in Sam hell is going on out there? What? Come on. I wouldn't put it past any of those people. I think it's going on. And for him to say, I've got to be careful how I say this, you don't say that unless you're trying to protect a source. You don't say that unless somebody told you something. And think about this for a second. If you are actually accusing, whether it's Ed Orgeron or Nick Saban or Dabo Sweeney, if you actually have evidence or information that a coach is actively trying to spread the virus among his team, that is not just everybody's fired, but that is lawsuits to the Stone Age.
Go Tigers!
Are you kidding? I mean, do you know what kind of accusation this is? You can look, you know, I'll make fun of these guys all day, especially Dabo Sweeney, who's a total clown face. He's just a blithering idiot. This is the guy who, when he asked about the spread of the virus, he says that Jesus is going to make it go away. And I'm thinking, well, he could have gotten on that already. If that were going to happen, maybe that would have kind of, you know, it happened. And the whole, I don't want to get into the parable of the drowning man in the flood, and famously as he ascends to heaven, and God's like, oh, I sent a car, I sent a boat, I sent a helicopter, and you ignored all of it. But he says that that's going to happen, that it's going to be, that Jesus will snap his fingers and it's going to go away. But at some point, he didn't say when that was going to happen. That's what Dabo said. But are you crazy that you are actually accusing Ed Orgeron and Nick Saban or Dabo Sweeney of telling players to infect each other? That would take every other college football scandal, you know, short of Art Briles and Joe Paterno. And I mean, seriously, and I can't say this enough. Well, yeah, let me say this first. This segment's brought to you by Amco Transmissions and Total Car Care. At 8 p.m., Chicagoans come out to salute essential workers during their shift change. And at 8 a.m., Amco Transmissions and Total Car Care opens to keep Chicagoans' transmissions shifting right. Call 1-800-GO-AMPCO or search AAMCO for a location near you. It may be that young people right now handle the onset of the virus and get through it mostly fine. It may be that at this stage, the virus doesn't threaten people who are younger in the same way that it threatens acutely people who are older, whether it is the inflammatory response, whether it is something that is being observed now called a cytokine storm that overwhelms the immune system when the immune system begins to attack itself in what's known as a cytokine storm. This is just the beginning of the beginning of the understanding of this virus. And if you think that people want to get it because, it's a nothing, talk to doctors about the virus that causes chicken pox and then shingles and what happens later in life, and that there are effects on organs and systems later in life and down the line where we have absolutely no idea. And I said this at the beginning, at the outset of the show, don't lose sight of that. Even though somebody's asymptomatic and said, okay, well, I tested positive for the antibodies and I got through it and I was fine. I had no issues. Or somebody said, yeah, I had a little fever for a while. I had a little bit of a cough and I was okay. We don't know. There could be invisible things going on with the virus, let alone the number of versions of this virus that have mutated through the populace. That we know there are different versions than initially came out of China. When you start saying, oh, yeah, we'll just give it to people and they'll get over it and then they'll have herd immunity. I don't know what to tell you, because you have doctors warning us that we won't know, and this will be studied longitudinally. This will be studied for people who don't understand. We didn't know about the relationship between shingles and the chickenpox virus for a long time, and it's taken like the last 20 years for doctors to get a better understanding and to create medicines and to know at what risk different people are depending on what they've been through before. And we're just starting out. The idea of it being a novel virus, doctors don't know. And anything's like, oh, he's fine and she's fine and she got better. You know, we don't know. So that concept, that is not only fired, but never work again anywhere. If that is something that you're actually doing, that's like cult leader stuff. What you're saying, those are two guys on a morning show on WFAN in New York saying that they're accusing by name, accusing these SEC coaches specifically. He's doing an Ed Orgeron impersonation. And if you've got evidence of this is the point. If you know this is happening, if somebody told you this is happening, we got to know. This is something you can't talk around. This is something you can't half step. If you know that coaches are ordering players to infect each other in the best interest of winning at college football, they're playing for free. They're playing football for free. Let alone, forget COVID. They're smashing into each other and taking years off their life and creating all sorts of health problems for themselves just for free anyway, because they want to. And then to say that they're going to expose themselves to a novel virus and contract a disease to make it more likely that they can continue to play football for free. We have really, really crossed into some level of insanity. What Cody Decker said felt like a completely different dimension. I mean, that is just I don't even know what to say much more than that. I do know that the Midday Midway is coming up, and we often talk about people as legendary in their field. We have truly lost a legend. We're also losing something near and dear to some of us in Chicago. This is going to be your last week to enjoy a certain Chicago institution. And we have somebody stupid doing something really, really stupid. But thankfully, unlike so many acts of stupidity, this is one that doesn't hurt other people. This is one that only hurt one idiotic woman because she's an idiot. And we'll get to all of these things next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago sports station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Dan Bernstein on The Score.
It's been a busy Tuesday here on Sports Radio 670. We got started by just talking about how amazing it is, the sports world in which we live, with players opting out of their seasons and deciding to not play for various reasons, and our understanding of that and the evolution of sports fandom in these times, and what's being accelerated into our understanding and awareness, whether it's Fred VanVleet talking about why he thinks that the NBA players shouldn't play, so they're playing anyway, but how important it is for him to balance the social consciousness of the NBA with actually playing the sport, and Ian Desmond also talking about his responsibilities as a father right now and how he feels about that. We heard from Jed Hoyer. We heard from David Ross. We talked to Patrick Mooney about what's going on with the Cubs. Cody Decker was tremendous, as he always is with the baseball stuff, and really laying into Yasmani Grandal, saying he's not going to lead anybody anywhere, and then telling the story about him taking his Biogenesis steroid gummies in the dugout in front of people and then immediately getting to the major leagues. And there were some people in that minor league dugout thinking, oh, great, good job, congratulations. And then we tried to just figure out how crazy the Boomer Esiason hypothesis is regarding major college football teams in the South. He's accusing them of spreading coronavirus on purpose so they can all get over it faster and be able to play football. I can't even get my head around the sheer awfulness of that. And if it's happening, and he knows it's happening, and someone told him it's happening, it has to be news. It can't just be speculation. Carl Reiner has died at age 98. And when I say we've lost a legend, this is no exaggeration. Even though his professional career existed in large part around the edges and in the background as producer and director and creator and writer, he has been a pillar of American comedy and entertainment. And nearing 100 years of life, he's been a part of so many important things. And personally, the reason it hits home is because I was raised on the Carl Reiner, Mel Brooks albums of the 2000-year-old man. My dad has been a Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner fan forever. And some of my earliest memories are actually listening to those records and not understanding half the jokes, but just watching my dad laugh until you know, tears are streaming down his face. And it's learning how to do the voices, learning comic timing, hearing Carl Reiner was the straight man for Mel Brooks's shtick for so many of these things. And he was just wonderful, an incredibly supportive comedic partner to so many people for so long. And before, like, the Chicago Improv, Del Close, Charna Halpern idea of yes and became popularized with those specific words, that's what something that I think Carl Reiner innately understood about how to empower people to be funny. Well, he was so funny himself. He won 9 Emmy Awards. He won 5. He was a creator of the Dick Van Dyke Show. He directed the films Oh God, The Jerk, and All of Me. And you may know him from Ocean's 11. And he'd done some voice work for Family Guy and King of the Hill and Bob's Burgers, and had remained up until his last day very active on Twitter, the father of Rob Reiner. But when you think about how he started, he won Emmys in 1956 and 1957. He was a regular cast member of Sid Caesar's Your Show of Shows, which was sort of the sketch comedy show from which all others sprang. And that writer's room, famously, when you think about how it was the lab for American comedy in so many different ways and places, that in that writer's room were Mel Brooks, Carl Reiner, Sid Caesar himself, Neil Simon, Woody Allen, and Larry Gelbart, who later went on to create MASH. I mean, everything started in large part in that room. But Carl Reiner truly has touched everything, every aspect of American comedy, and was also a dear soul and will be greatly missed. Sometimes you do something stupid and it endangers other people, you know, like refusing to wear a mask or wearing your mask over your mouth and not your nose, and we say, oh, there's an idiot. But there's some sadness in it, because being an idiot is really endangering other people. This is not one of those situations. A bison gored a 72-year-old woman in Yellowstone National Park after she approached within 10 feet multiple times to take its photo. Bad matchup. This is according to a National Park Service press release. The press release said the incident occurred last Thursday evening at the California Woman's campsite at Bridge Bay Campground. The woman was transported to Eastern Idaho Regional Medical Center via helicopter after rangers provided immediate care on site for multiple goring wounds. You don't want those. One is bad. Multiple goring wounds, not bad. No further information about her condition was immediately available. The series of events that led to the goring suggest the bison was threatened by being repeatedly approached to within 10 feet. That, according to Yellowstone senior bison biologist Chris Jeremia. They make the senior bison biologist available for such things. Usually you only get the junior bison biologist, but they trotted out the Bigfoot for this one. Bison are wild animals. Thanks. That respond to threats by displaying aggressive behaviors like pawing the ground, snorting, bobbing their head, bellowing, raising their tail. If that doesn't make the threat, in this instance it was a person, move away, a threatened bison may charge. To be safe around bison, stay at least 25 yards away, move away if they approach, and run away or find cover if they charge. The incident remains under investigation. No, I don't think so. I don't think there's investigation. I think if you are going at a bison multiple times, I think, you know what that is? That ends up being on you. That is the bison like, okay, we're going to do this. All right, now this is happening, and now you're getting gored. You have 1 week, and actually I think less now, to shop at the Vienna Beef Factory store. And you know the one I'm talking about, right near Fullerton and Elston and Damon, right? There's the big red-colored suspension bridge that goes over the river, and there's the outlet store there. And if you're a big fan of Vienna Beef and all their products, as I am, that means you've been by that outlet store there. The Vienna Beef Factory store is going to close on July 3rd. So there's going to be a big sale coming up this weekend, the 4th of July sale beginning Friday, and they put up a post on Facebook. It says, throughout the years, we've loved seeing you all visit and take pictures at our factory store and cafe on Damon. While we're excited for the future, we're sad to announce that July 3rd will be our last day of business. It is truly the end of an era. The Vienna Beef Factory is moving out of its longtime Bucktown home, and it will be replaced with something called Drive Shack. Drive Shack, baby! It's a $40 million driving range complex, but that doesn't really tell the tale of what Drive Shack is. Give them a look. It's a climate-controlled driving range with 102 hitting bays. There's a restaurant, there's a bar, and a public river walk. But what it really appears to be is a massive amusement park for you and me. And this is going to be a place, I have a feeling, that Drive Shack is going to take a lot of my money. Because it looks like the idea is a competitor to Top Golf, but it looks like it's more than that. That they've got, like, old-school video game room. It's like Pac-Man and Galaga and Donkey Kong. And it looks like they're going after a combination of 51-year-old me and 15-year-old me. And it's like, take all my money. It's golf games. You can actually go and actually, you know, hit balls and work on your game. And then they've got all the Top Golf type stuff with one of the golfing games involves playing cards and a version of blackjack, depending on where your ball lands. And you can get all these gambling games going on with your friends. And obviously they wouldn't, it's not a casino. They can't support that. So I can't say that they would sign off on it, but wink, wink. There's a version of darts that you can play depending on where you hit your ball and if you're scoring points, if you're playing like 301 or 501 or cricket on various targets. I don't know what's virtual, what's overlaid. I haven't seen exactly how it goes down, but it looks like they've got high-end level bar food, and I think this is going to be a place. This is going to be a place for weddings and bar mitzvahs, a lot of bar mitzvahs, I think, you know, where Whirly Ball was getting a lot of that action. This Drive Shack, I'm still going to be able to get my Vienna Beef hot dogs, which are really good. I mean, I love the Omaha Steaks all beef hot dogs, but you know, a close second, or I think Vienna Beef really got that right level of garlic to them and a nice snap and the casing. So you can get your Vienna Beef, you can get your corned beef, you can get your hot dogs at the grocery store still. And then I'm telling you, this Drive Shack thing looks like it's going to be a thing. Yeah, lastly, flying snakes. And it's called the paradise tree snake. They live in South Asia and Southeast Asia. And we've seen video of them flying before. They leap from a tree and they twist around and they can move like 70 feet in the air. And they're not really flying, but it's a controlled fall. And now it's been studied. There's some research in the journal Nature Physics. They did motion capture on 7 different flying snakes. And they took them to a special motion capture place called The Cube. It's a theater space that's an empty black box. It's equipped with high-tech, expensive motion capture cameras. And they put all of the little blinking dots on these poor snakes. And it is so cool how they computer modeled the undulations of the snakes in the air. And they actually have a way of contorting themselves when they fly to make them stay in the air more efficiently and longer that they have developed over time. And they were able to take out different aspects on the computer graph of y-axis and x-axis. It looks like Pitch Lab, or it looks like they did this on with the Rapsodo and Edgertronic cameras. I didn't know that snakes could decide to fly through the air. And they did say at one point they were actually catching them rather than letting them fall on mattresses that they had set down. Now that I would pay to see. You want to make a sport out of snake catching, launching, throwing snakes at each other? This some of the video on this is really amazing. But yeah, there are flying snakes, and now they know how they fly. And that is the Midday Midway. And I don't know what more you can need in your Midday Midway. We had to make a flip of guests. We made them flip. We made Danny Ecker flip, and we made Rich Lerner flip. So we're going to do hockey, and what could be going on very, very soon in Chicago is an NHL playoff hub. Danny Ecker of Crane Chicago Business is going to join us next. After that, we'll talk about what's going on in the PGA right now with Rich Lerner of Golf Channel. So next up, Chicago may be a hockey hotbed very soon. We'll get the latest on the score.
Mully
and Haw here,
reminding you that you can start your day with us by listening to the score remotely on your laptop, your mobile device, through the radio.com app, or just tell your smart speaker to play 670 the score.
Count on us to cover the sports stories that matter to Chicago, because we're live and we're local.
Mully and Haw, mornings 5 to 9
on Sports Radio 670 the score, Chicago Sports Station.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.